I had been thinking about for some time, and I would say that for those of you who are not married, this may be one of the most important sermons you'll ever hear in your life. It was a remark was made just recently that the reasons that some people had problems in their marriages is because they weren't counseled by the ministry. Well, I'll tell you, when I get done today and you say you weren't counseled, don't ever throw it up in my face that you weren't. You're here to listen, and if you listen, you young people who are not married, and anybody's not married, you better listen carefully. Don't ever try to use an excuse then that you never heard the truth. Because the question I'm going to pose, or the statement I'm going to pose today is, what should you look for in a mate, biblically? You're not married or you're single, and you're thinking about getting married, what should you look for in a mate? What would the Bible ask you or require that you look for in a mate? Now, if you look at the marriages in this world, and about 50% of them or better end up in failure, I think you can conclude very rapidly two things. That there is no real understanding in this world about what marriage is and what it's all about. I'm talking about people that have never had a knowledge of the truth, don't care, and don't want it. They have no understanding of what marriage is all about, what it represents, what it signifies, and what it really means. That's the first thing. And then secondly, you certainly conclude, they have no understanding of what to look for in a mate. So for all of the marriages that end up in divorce, there are probably at least another half of those that remain together that are unhappy marriages, that are marriages of convenience for the children's sake, where the parents set a perfectly miserable example in front of their children and for their children, and yet remain together in a, quote, married state. Now let's begin by referring to a little book entitled here, The Peter Prescription. And I'm going to tell you the rest of the story concerning Cinderella. You all heard the story of Cinderella. She met her charming prince, and she was changed into a beautiful princess, and they got married and lived ever after. Did you ever wonder, the author says here, whether Cinderella and the charming prince really did live happily ever after, as the fairy tale suggests? A more probable version of their marital outcome is that they were miserable together. In other words, Cinderella's fairy godmother was really a villain, not a godsend. By transforming Cinderella temporarily from rags to riches and winning for her the young prince, the fairy godmother escalated Cinderella beyond the limits of her social competence. The prince, as it turned out, was really no more than a typical royal playboy, and he soon grew tired of Cinderella's peasant mannerisms once he had satisfied his playboy's instinct. Unfortunately for Cinderella, social competence in the cultured way of the king's court did not descend upon her just because she married royalty. She soon fell out of favor with the prince's family and friends. The more Cinderella was criticized about her uncourtly ways, the more miserable the prince made life for her. Their marriage was doomed to failure. That really is a realistic assessment of the fairy tale. Because in reality, and even in their cases, and of course you know this is just a story, but they certainly didn't understand what marriage was all about, and they certainly did not understand what to look for in a mate. You know, any relationship that's going to end in marriage ought to start out with love, even as God's relationship did with Israel. Because if you notice here in Jeremiah, the second chapter, this is what the Lord said in Jeremiah 2, verse number 2, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth, the love of thine espousals, when thou wentest after me in the wilderness, in the land that was not sown. So there was a time when there was a passionate courtship, in a spiritual sense, between God and Israel, and that is indeed is the way any marriage relationship should start. I would say you would have a very, very slight chance of having a successful marriage if you were absolutely repulsed and could not stand the person you were marrying, and if you were not physically attracted. That certainly is a factor. However, it is probably, on a scale of 1 to 10, probably reigns about 4. Because there are other things that are certainly far more important in the long run. When we're talking about physical attraction, we're really talking about a short-term thing that begins a relationship. But that's not what generally makes it continue year after year after year. Especially when she gets dumpy and fat, and he gets bald and gray-haired and old. There has to be something besides physical attraction. You can be sure of that. I think we could conclude from the Bible, I'm just hitting a few high spots here before we start. I think we could conclude from the Bible to a large extent. We bring into our marriage relationship what we have been all along from the time we were children. That's why the Bible tells us here in Proverbs chapter 20 and verse number 11. Even a child is known by his doings, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. You have a little child who's an honest, decent, wholesome little child, he'll generally remain that way all of his life. If you have a child who has never had any curtailing, any direction or instruction on the elements of human nature that generally dominate, he'll grow up the same way, selfish and self-centered, nothing more than a worthless character. So to a large extent, when we stand as adults, unless we really are converted and have a change really take place as a result of God's Spirit, we're going to bring into a marriage relationship the sum total of what we have been all of our lives. Now, if I were a person going to marry a woman, I'd want some kind of an idea of what kind of a person this has been all of her life. And I would think a woman would want the same thing of a man. In Proverbs 22 and verse number 6, this is why we're told in the Bible, and this is probably the biggest failure on the part of parents, because here are parents that have children, they rear them, and then they get ready to turn them loose. And what have they been bequeathed to society? What have they bequeathed to a marriage partner? That's why it says very plainly here, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Yet I've seen people, believe it or not, who have grown up in the church, and neither one of them have the slightest idea what marriage is all about, and neither one of them had an idea or have an idea what to look for in a mate. That's why it says here, when it says the word train, if you look in your marginal rendering, it says catechize. Catechizing. That doesn't mean just telling once or twice. That means go over and over and over and over and drum it in his head and teach a child from the time he's little right and wrong principles. So let's remember that we're bringing into a marriage relationship the sum total of our background and our training. And we're going to really see whether or not our parents have done an admirable job or not in bringing us forth to make us, bring us to the position where we're somebody else's husband or wife. All right, with that set aside now, let's pose the question, what should we look for in a wife or a husband? Well, let's start out then. Here's a wife looking at a husband. If she's thinking, now we're talking about biblically. You can forget about the world, because I think I can safely say that if you go out and marry in the world, you're just rolling dice. And you're going to probably end up on the short end of the stick. But what should a woman who's a Christian woman want to see in a man if she wants to marry a man who's a Christian man? Well, we can begin right at the beginning. First and foremost, one of her primary concerns should be that she's going to marry a man who is not going to become an adulterer later on. That's why the Bible has some pretty straightforward comments on the matter of adultery. In other words, if she marries a man that believes that adultery is absolutely wrong, She has a much better chance of having a successful marriage than if she marries a man that doesn't really care a whole lot or doesn't think a whole lot whether adultery's right or wrong. And I would also add this, that if she marries a man that doesn't have the proper kind of training and the background that a Christian has, she's probably not going to have a man that has those concepts to begin with. God commanded ancient Israel in Exodus 20 in verse number 7, thou shalt not commit adultery. In the years that I've spent in the ministry, I can tell you I have seen many, many homes and marriages wrecked because of that. The book of Proverbs adds a little bit to it here that I think puts it in a rather succinct and effective manner. Notice it here in Proverbs chapter 5 and verse number 15. If a woman is looking for a Christian man, a man who's going to fulfill the requirements biblically, then this is what kind of a man she should be looking at. A man who pays heed to these words. Proverbs 5, verse 15. Drink waters out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad, and rivers of waters in the street. Let them be only thine own, and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Don't think you're going to find marital satisfaction elsewhere. It ought to be wrapped up entirely in the wife of your youth. Let her, notice what it says here. This is what ought to continue on in the marriage relationship year after year after year. This is what a woman should be looking at. She should be looking at, in short, at a man who makes a commitment and is going to do everything in his power to live up to that commitment. Let her be as a loving hind and a pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. For why will you, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? So here's a woman. If she's looking for a man, she should be looking for a man then who understands the right and wrongs of adultery, the right and wrongs in a marriage relationship, and he's the kind of a man of character that she can have confidence on. He's going to stick with that. Not some good time Charlie that he'll stick with her until things get rough and then he'll go look for somebody else. Now notice Proverbs 6, verse 23. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproof of instruction are the way of life. For what reason? What purpose? To keep thee from the evil woman. So here's a man that if he pays heed to God's laws, he's not going to allow himself to get involved in some kind of an extramarital affair. From the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in your heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulterer will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever touches her shall not be innocent. One of the things that God says about his people, he said, when I fed them to the full, then they flocked like troops to the harlots' houses, and everyone neighed after his neighbor's wife. These are men who have not made a commitment to a woman. I tell you, if I were a woman thinking about getting married to a man, that's one of the primary things I'd want to know. I'd want to know if this man really is a Christian, if he really is converted, and if he's really going to make a commitment. Or whether he's just playing games. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he's hungry, but if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. But by contrast, whoso commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. And he that doeth it destroys his own soul. So if I were a woman, I certainly, that's one of the primary things I would want to be looking at. Now, let's just switch the table here. What would I be looking for if I were a man? You know something? I'd be looking for exactly the same thing. I'd be looking for a woman who has made a commitment and a woman who has enough fear and respect for God that she's not going to go out and commit adultery. So really, the truth of the matter is, in these particular issues I'm talking about right here, both of them apply to both the man and the woman. So if you want to look at the text, Exodus 20, verse 14, and Proverbs 5, 15 through 19, that applies to a woman just as well as a man. We might add one other thing here as far as a woman is concerned. Let's say if a man is looking for a wife, and he wants a wife who's faithful, then he's going to look at a wife who heeds this text here. Notice it in Proverbs 7. Beginning in verse number 6. At the window of my house, I looked out through the casement and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a man void of understanding. Passing through the street near her corner, he went to the way to her house. In the twilight, in the evening, in the black of the dark night, and behold, there met him a woman with the entire of a harlot and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said to him, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, alloys, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our full of love till morning. Let us solace ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He is gone on a long journey. The word goodman means husband there. So he's going to look at a woman that has read this and has enough fear to see the consequences of this kind of action. He wants to marry a woman who's going to be faithful and loyal, because what if he is going to be on a long journey? What if he's going to be gone for a long time? I lived in a neighborhood one time where a woman across the street was cavorting with a postman. So you know what you're going to look for in a man, you're going to look for in a woman too. A husband wants to look at a wife in the same way. Is she going to be a committed wife? Or is she going to be someone that cannot be trusted? Now there's another thing. If I were a woman and I were looking for a man, a future husband, and I were considering him, there's something else that I would absolutely want to insist on. I'd want him to be committed to. And that is, I would want him to be committed to the concept that it's absolutely wrong to divorce or separate. If I'm marrying somebody that he's marrying me for a short time until he gets tired of me, and he's going to give the marriage a try, you know, with the idea if it works, and if it doesn't work, that's all right, I'll divorce and go to somebody else. You've got a losing game already. It's as bad as a prenuptial agreement. You know what a prenuptial agreement is? It's a divorce agreement. What chance does a marriage really have when it starts out with a prenuptial agreement? They've already decided how they're going to divorce. You're going to build a marriage on that kind of a concept? Notice what we read here. Here's a woman now. She's looking at a man. What does she want to see in a man? Well, let's go back to the book of Malachi here. She doesn't want this kind of a man. You can be sure of that. As we read in Malachi 2, beginning in verse 13, and this have you done again, covering the altar of the Lord with tears, with weeping and crying out, inasmuch that he regardeth not the offering any more, or receives it with goodwill at your hand. They're wondering why God's turned his back on them and he's not responding to them. God tells you why. Yet you say, wherefore? You're crying because you're not being accepted, and then you ask why. And here's what God says, because the Lord has been a witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have dealt treacherously. How many times have you seen these Hollywood movie stars? They're just one class. There are a lot of other people who do the same thing. The Hollywood movie stars just get all the notoriety, though. But they've been married to a wife for 20 or 30 years, and then all of a sudden they decide to kick her out and pick up some young girl in her 20s. How many times have you seen that? I can tell you that's utterly disgusting in the eyes of God. You have dealt treacherously against the wife of your youth. Yet is she thy companion, and did not he make one? Yet he had the residue of spirit, and wherefore one, that he might seek a godly seed. Or as one of the other translations, Living Bible, whichever one it says, not one of you has any trace of moral sense. Not one desires to have children from God. We talk about an immoral society. We're looking at a society that is uncommitted. That's what we're looking at. A society that has no understanding about marriage, what it signifies, that it signifies a union between Christ and His church, and that it is a representation of God's relationship with man. They have no concept whatsoever that that's what it represents. So they get tired of a wife after 20 years and kick her out and pick up some young gal 20 years younger. Wherefore, take heed to your spirit, and let none of you deal treacherously against the wife of your youth. For the Lord God of Israel says that He hates putting away. Whereas one of the other marginal renderings says, He hates divorce. The Lord God of Israel hates divorce. So if I were a woman thinking about getting married to a man, I can tell you one thing for certain. I'd want to know where he really stands, whether he's got a commitment to the truth and to the Bible revelation concerning marriages for life, and he wouldn't even think of divorce. Now, if I were a man marrying a woman, I'd want to know the same thing. I'd want to know if she has a belief system that really upholds the truth of God, or whether, as soon as the going gets tough or some other good time Charlie comes along, she's going to decide to run after him. Now, this is covered really in the New Testament. That's why we read here in 1 Corinthians 7. First of all, we talk about the man in 1 Corinthians 7, verse number 10, and it says here very plainly, let not the wife depart from her husband, but and if she depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife. So here it is. Do you have this as a real belief system? Do you really believe this because you know it's the truth of God? And is the person you're going to marry have this same kind of belief? And I tell you this, I wouldn't want to just take his word for it necessarily. I've seen people, you know, I've actually had to tell people, you know, you think just because you're marrying somebody in the church, that's going to make it absolutely fail-safe. You got another guest coming. Just because they, quote, come to church, unquote, doesn't cut any ice. Are they really converted, and do they fear God? Or are they just giving you lip service? I'd really want to know that. In fact, I'd want to be absolute certain and positive about that. So as it says here, unto the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, let not the wife depart from her husband. I'd want to know that I'm marrying a woman that isn't going to run home to mama when the going gets tough. She's got enough determination that she is going to stick, and she's going to make that marriage work. And the same thing applies to the man. That he's going to do what it takes to make that marriage work. Now it says that she departs in a state of rebellion. It'd be ridiculous for Paul to say, let not the wife depart from her husband, but that's all right, let her depart. Wouldn't that be ridiculous? Paul is not saying that. He is saying, let her not depart, but if in a state of rebellion she departs, all right, then let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. And I can tell you one thing. You marry somebody that doesn't have that kind of commitment, your marriage is headed for trouble. I don't care who you are. I'm just talking about principles that involve everybody that's considering marriage. I'm talking to you young people today who have not been married, or maybe some of you who are a little older that haven't been married. I'm talking to you because if you ever make this decision, you better be sure you make the right one. There's some things when you stand up in front of God and you take a vow about, you're not going to just erase me by saying, well, I'm going to go home to mama. So I would want to know absolutely without any equivocation that this person has a commitment to the marriage relationship and the marriage state and is absolutely realizes and knows that separation and divorce is wrong in the sight of God and will not do it. That's what I'd want to know. And I'll tell you, if I married a person that didn't have that kind of commitment, if I knew we're getting involved with somebody that had that kind of an attitude, I wouldn't go any further in the relationship. And when you marry somebody, let me say this too, when you marry somebody who's come out of that home life, they have lived in a home where there have been divorces and remarriages, you've already got a couple strikes against you already. Because usually people behave the way their parents did, and they're usually going to act the way their parents did. Now, there's something else I'd want to know here. This is probably way down on the list, but unfortunately, when people get married, this becomes the number one thing in their minds. This is all they think about. It's like that Johnny Cash song, you know. We got married in a fever, hotter than a peppered sprout. We've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out. Yeah, how true. How true. They get married in the heat of passion, and the thing that probably is the least important in the long run, they make the first, and then that sets a stage for failure and an absolute debacle in the marriage because they don't pay attention to all the other things that are far more important. But as Paul said it here in 1 Corinthians 7, verses 3 through 5, if I were a woman wanting to marrying a man, I'd want to know that this man is considerate. Because it says here, let the husband render unto the wife her conjugal dues, is the way the Moffat translation puts it. And likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife has not power over her own body but the husband. And likewise also the husband has not power over his own body but the wife. And as the Moffat translation puts it, do not withhold sexual intercourse from one another except it be with consent for a time, that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer and then come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. I have known women who have used sex as a tool against their husbands. Kind of dole it out, you know, a little bit at a time to keep the money coming in and all the benefits and the perks that she wants. I've seen that happen. And I've seen it happen the other way around too, with the man. You know, I haven't spent 30-some years in the ministry without learning a few things. Well, I can tell you one thing. It's because when people get married, they do not understand what marriage is all about. They don't understand what the marriage relationship represents. They have no understanding of the proper relationship of sex and marriage. And I'm talking about people who have actually been reared and grown up in the church, quote unquote. I knew a whole lot more about this type of thing when I was in the former affiliation because I wasn't dealing at that time with a few hundred people. We were dealing with thousands of people. I had three churches under me. I had 1,500 people in the churches I pastored at one time. I had a church that was almost 800, one single church. So I know what these problems can develop into. Let us not assume for one moment, because we're a little church, we don't have problems, and we're never going to have problems along this line, because we are. If I were a man getting married to a woman, I'd want to know what her attitude is, if she has a proper perspective toward sex, as the Bible really teaches it. And if I were a woman, I'd want to know the same thing about the man. So you see, it applies in both ways. Is there going to be a proper marital compatibility? Or are you going to marry a woman? Because I've known of cases where this happens. They're all lovey-dovey in their first stage and they get married and he finds out she just hates sex. Well, maybe it's part of his fault. Probably both their faults. They need some education, I can tell you that for sure. Those are the kind of things I'd want to know before I were considering marriage. And I'd also want to place that in its proper perspective. That doesn't belong at the top of the list. Because that's going to burn out after a while. You know, after X number of years, that's going to finally burn out. But the other things are going to be what really cause the marriage to stick. Now, let's look a little bit further here. If I were a woman thinking about getting married to a man, I tell you, this is what I would want to look at. I'd want to know if he's this kind of a man. Ephesians 5, 25 through 33. Husbands, love your wives. Is he really going to love you and be kind and considerate, or is he going to be self-centered and selfish and want his way? Every decision that's ever made is the way he wants it, and he doesn't give a hoot or care about what you or the children think. Is that the kind of a man you're going to marry? Are you marrying some kind of a selfish, self-centered brat that's never grown up? You better find that out before you get married. You can find it out if you're smart. Just look at his family. Look at the family relationship. How does he get along with his brothers and sisters? What kind of a home life did he have? I'd want to know a lot of those things before I ever considered marriage to someone if I were a woman. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. And here again, this whole passage is showing this wonderful representation that marriage depicts, the relationship between Christ and the church, where he says that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of the water by the word. You know what Christ did for his church? He gave his life for it. He sacrificed his life for his church. That's what a husband should be willing to do for his wife, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. You know, the Bible doesn't even say that a man has to love his wife more than he loves himself, but if he loves his wife as well as he loves himself, he'll be treating her very kindly, because most people love themselves. That's the number one person they love. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loves his wife loves himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, even as the Lord the church. So if you have any kind of love for yourself, the same kind of love should be exemplified towards your wife. If I were a woman thinking about getting married, I would want to know whether he's that kind of a man or not. Whether he's going to be some kind of a brutal tyrant that's uncaring, that's selfish, that only thinks about himself, that has no consideration. That's what I'd want to know. I'd want to know that point very, very much. That would probably be one of the most important things I'd want to know. Whether or not he's like a little kid, he doesn't have his way, and then he just throws a temper tantrum and throws a fit and has no self-control. Well, I can tell you, there have been a lot of abused women in halfway houses across this country today because they married abusive husbands like that, that beat them up at the slightest whim. That's the kind of a man you're marrying? I tell you what I'd want to find out for certain. I'd want to find out if his father ever had the habit of beating his mother up. And I can tell you, if I found out that his father beat his mother up regularly, if I were a woman, I wouldn't touch that man with a 10-foot pole. As I can say, chances are very, very great that's the kind of treatment you're going to get later on, as soon as the fever wears out, you know. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself. Ladies, young women, if I were looking at a man, that's one of the things I'd be looking very, very closely at. I'd want to know that for certain. Whether he's going to be abusive, short-tempered, angry all the time, fault-finding, picky, critical. One of the worst things that can destroy a marriage is that kind of an attitude. Colossians 3, verse number 19, because this ties right in with it. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them.
You know, we heard that song years and years ago. Probably a lot of you never heard it, wouldn't even remember, but it was a popular song when I was a boy, and it went, "You always hurt the one you love, the one you love most of all." Isn't that right? Seems like the person you're the closest to is the one you'll get the angriest at. And when husbands are abusive that way toward their wives, then, as it says here, they're being bitter against them. They don't like the way she fixed the coffee. They don't like the way she fixes a meal. They don't like this. They don't like that. And they're just fault-finding and picky all the time. And they're in a constant attitude of agitation and bitterness and resentment toward their wives. I tell you, if I were a woman going to get married, I'd want to know whether he's going to be that kind of a husband. Now, maybe I'm saying there are some of these things that you can't know. Well, I think you could find out pretty well. I think you could have a pretty good idea. You may not know every little detail, but you could have enough to certainly throw up flags and give you a warning. I remember years ago, a woman was engaged to a man younger than herself. And he was living in a house with some other young men, and one of the other young men had a dog or a cat in the house. I don't remember which one it was. And this fellow was engaged to this girl. He got so mad, he kicked that cat or that dog and tried to kill it. And when he did that, that woman saw that, she broke off that relationship just like that. I think she did the wise thing. She probably would have put up with a lot of that if she'd have married him. So be not bitter and harsh against them. Now, let's go to another point. This is a certainly important one, probably one of the most important of all, yet one that most young people, when they get married about, they think about the least. And that's this, 1 Timothy 5, verse number 8. "But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." What if he won't support you? He can't support you. He won't support you. He's too lazy. He doesn't want to work. He won't put himself out in you. He just does enough to get by and leaves you in a kind of a state of poverty at all times. That's the kind of a life you want to live? I tell you what you better find out. You better find out if this fellow's capable of making a good living and if he can support you. That's what I'd certainly want to know if I were a young woman getting married. And as we read in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse number 10, "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither shall he eat. For we hear there are some which walk among you disorderly." They're disorderly and contrary to the Bible teaching. "Working not at all, but are busybodies." They've got time to be involved in other people's business, but they're not busy enough to not have time to do that kind of thing. So let's just look at this matter of providing for the family. That certainly is one of the most important factors. You marry some guy that he's lazy and he won't work and he can't support you and he won't support you, what have you asked for the rest of your life? I'd want to know whether or not he is capable and is willing. I'm not saying that we're all going to be living in luxury and having everything just, you know, in $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 categories of income. But I'm saying, is he really willing to put himself out and to sacrifice and work and do what it takes to make a success? I'd certainly want to know that. I can tell you that. I tell you, most young people, they get married, they don't even think of any of these issues. All they think about is, "Oh, he's so cute." And all he thinks about, "Boy, she built." That's about as far as their thinking goes. Then they wonder why they don't have a happy marriage or why the thing ends up in a separation or divorce. Now, there's one other thing I want to mention here concerning the men, then we'll get over here to the women. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse number 7. "If I were a woman, I'd want to know whether he's considerate." Because it says here, Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them according, and he uses the word knowledge here, and it actually means dwell with them according to wise consideration, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. That tells you several things there, frankly. You know what that tells you? You certainly want to know if he's a praying man. What if he doesn't have time for prayer? Prayer is not important enough for him, and he lets it go sporadically. You know, maybe once every 3 or 4 months he prays a little bit. You'll go long periods of time without prayer. He doesn't pray at all. You want to marry a guy like that? I'll tell you something. You're asking for disaster. Absolute disaster. You'll never make it into God's kingdom if prayer is not a daily part of your life, regularly, every single day. Don't delude yourself and kid yourself and think otherwise. You want to marry somebody like that? He doesn't have any contact with God. He does not have God's Spirit dwelling in him. He's only going on his own physical prowess, whatever that level may be. And then when things go wrong, he just goes to pieces. Or he deserts, or he runs off. But you see, he's got to deal with his wife, as it says here, according to wise consideration, and he honors his wife as a weaker vessel. Now, that doesn't mean he pushes her up in front and lets her call all the shots. And, you know, it's like the joke Mr. Armstrong used to tell about years and years ago. This fellow said he got married, and he said when they got married, he said we made one decision when we got married, and that is I'd make all the big decisions, and she'd make all the little decisions. And then the fellow asked him, well, what big decisions have you made? And he said, I don't know. I haven't made any yet. Yeah. So the husband better recognize he's supposed to be the head of the family. He's supposed to take the lead. He's supposed to be a man with some masculinity and some leadership. But he can't be a tyrant along with it either. So he does honor his wife, and he does show consideration for her needs. That doesn't only mean her physical needs. That means her emotional needs too. If he's abusive, and he's fault-finding, and he's not caring, and he's indifferent all the time, he's not taking care of her emotional needs. She has emotional needs just like she has physical needs. And he'd better wake up to that fact. All right, now, those are the things that if I were a wife, I'd be looking for in a husband. Now, what if I were a husband? What would I be looking for in a wife? Well, let's go to 1 Corinthians 11. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse number 3. This is one of the first things I'd want to know. Whether she understands this and really perceives it, and this is a part of her thinking and her makeup. Because if it isn't, I can tell you you're going to have all kinds of problems throughout your marriage. This is what I'd want to be looking for in a woman. I would have you to know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man. The head of the woman is the man. Does she accept that and believe that? Or has she been tainted by the humanism, the humanistic concepts that are in this world, and the women's liberation movement? And don't think for one moment, ladies, that you can't be tainted with that. You certainly can be, and probably have been, to a greater extent than what you recognize. But I'll tell you this, if she's a woman that is not going to accept a husband as the head of the house, you might as well chuck it right away, throw the towel in and forget about it. Unless he's going to decide that she's going to be the head of the house, and she's going to call the shots, and he's going to kowtow to her all of their married life. And if he does, I can tell you, you're going to pay the price later on with your children. Somebody's going to pay the price for it. Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, verse number 22. Wives, submit yourselves. That's one of the most difficult things for a woman to do, is to submit herself to the authority of her husband. And I can tell you, conversely, one of the hardest things it is for a man to do is to love his wife properly. Wives, submit. I tell you, if I were marrying some woman, and I could see that I was going to be at loggerheads with her, every time we did something, we got into an argument, she wanted to have her way on every single thing we did, I tell you, she'd be the easiest woman in the world to walk away from and forget. Because that's exactly what you're going to get the rest of your marriage. Somebody you have to fight all the time. Is that what you want? I'm not saying she should not have her opinions and she should not be given consideration for her viewpoints. You should listen carefully. Take her counsel into consideration. But if you're going to be the kind of a fellow that you've got to fight with on everything, you're already headed for a sad marriage. You may stick together, but I can tell you your children will show the results of it later on, 20 years later. You may work out some kind of a compromise agreement between the two of you, but there will be a price to be paid. So as we read here, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Stop about and think that for a moment. Ladies, those of you who spend any time in prayer, you drop down on your knees and you pray to God, and that's the way you view God, your Lord, as bowing in front of Him and humbling yourself before Him. Unmitigated gall for Paul to make this statement. Submit yourselves unto your husbands as unto the Lord. That's strong meat, isn't it? Boy, I'll tell you, that would raise the hackles of the liberation movement like you never believed. There it is. Now, if you have any respect and fear for God and for God's word at all, you better pay careful heed to this. Now, I can tell you, if I were marrying some woman, that's one of the primary things I'd want to know. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. He's the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Look at that. Everything. How many women really believe that? I tell you, I wouldn't marry a woman that didn't believe it. Not unless I wanted to make my life miserable. And as it says here in verse 33, and the wife, see that she reverence her husband. Is that the way you'd feel toward your husband? Well, that's the way you should feel. And if you don't feel that way, I can tell you this. I believe there are many people who grow up, and even in the church, some of them grew up, and they will never be fit candidates for marriage and should never marry, frankly. Because all they would do when they entered into a marriage, they would make it a disaster. Not only for themselves, but their husband and their children. They'd be better off never to be married. If you cannot conform to what the Bible requires, a biblical requirement for a marriage, really in the sight of God, you're not a fit candidate for marriage. 1 Peter 3, verses 5 and 6. I'd want to know this too, if I were a man thinking about getting married to a woman. Likewise, 1 Peter 3, you wives, beginning in verse 1, be in subjection to your own husbands. Be in subjection. I'd want to know if she's going to be in subjection or not. Notice what it says here specifically in verse number 5. After this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God. Holy women who trusted in God. I wonder how many holy women there are today who really trust in God. What did they do? They adorned themselves. Well, this is what they adorned themselves with. Being in subjection under their own husbands. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. That's strong language, and I can tell you it is very strong. I mean, it goes against the grain of this entire humanistic society in which we live today. That this is the way it is. This is what the Bible is going to require. And if you cannot make a success in marriage, you will never make it into the kingdom of God. It's plain and simple. If you cannot even carry out the proper relationship in a marriage that is a type of the marriage relationship between Christ and the church, it's a failure, plain and simple. Calling him Lord, it says here. If I were marrying someone, I wouldn't want her to be bowing down in front of me and calling me Lord, literally, but I'd certainly expect her to cultivate that kind of an attitude. If she didn't have that attitude, I wouldn't want her with a 10-foot pole, if you want to know the truth. I know what the Bible requires for both men and women. Notice again what it says here in Colossians 3, verse number 18. It says here, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as it is fit in the Lord. I'd want to know if this woman I'm thinking about marrying is going to be a submissive woman and a submissive wife. And notice what God made woman for, of all things. Genesis 2, verse number 18. The Lord God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make an help meet for him." Are you a help meet or a help hindrance? Do you help him or do you fight him? Now, sure, I know that there are people in this congregation and who are hearing this tape who have been divorced because they've made bad choices in the past. They didn't know the things that I'm talking to you about today. But I'm saying, any of you young people who are hearing this, let this sermon be a testimony and a witness to you this day. Don't ever come back later and say you were not told. You have been told. And you better heed it if you want to have a happy marriage. Notice another thing the Bible tells us about here as far as a woman is concerned. This is in 1 Timothy 5. There's some strong language here by the Apostle Paul. He says this in verse number 14. 1 Timothy 5, verse 14. "I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion for the adversary to speak reproachfully." We're living in a socialistic society in a world today where every single thing that is done in the workforce is contrary to this. But you're going to have to ask yourself, what's more important to you? The kingdom of God or the amenities that this world has to offer? You're a young person thinking about getting married, you better be thinking about these things. If you have the concept in your mind that you're not going to be a homemaker and you're not going to be a mother, you're going to be out on the workforce all of your life, well then I can say that if a man marries you, he better go into that with his eyes open, and you better tell him how you really feel, that you do not intend to be a mother and that you intend to be in the workforce. Now if he wants to marry you under those circumstances, that's his right. I wouldn't do it myself personally because the Bible shows me otherwise. But it does say this, "Let her guide the house, give none occasion for the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some have already turned aside after Satan." So she's a homemaker, and she spends her time in the home. And notice what it says here in Titus 2, verses 4 and 5. The older women are supposed to teach the younger women, what does it say? To be sober. That is to have self-restraint. I can tell you, I've known women that have absolutely, whatever latest fashion comes out or whatever new pair of shoes comes out, she's got to have it. And I mean, her closet is full of clothes. She's got 50 pairs of shoes sitting there, and she walks up in front of the closet and she says, "I don't have anything to wear." I mean, some women just have an insatiable appetite for clothes and fashions and things of that nature. She doesn't have any self-restraint. I've known people who have gotten married where the husband gave the wife a credit card and in very short order found himself in thousands and thousands of dollars of debt. She didn't have any self-control, any self-restraint, any common sense. What it says here about a woman, she'd better be wise, as it says here, have self-restraint, and to love their husbands, and to love their children, to be discreet, to have common sense, to be chaste, wholesome, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands. Why? Listen to this, that the word of God be not blasphemed. That's strong language, ladies, young women. That is strong language. It's a serious matter. You know, one of the blessings that comes from a proper marriage relationship is found right here in the book of Psalms, in Psalm 128, beginning here in verse number 1. "Blessed is everyone that fears the Lord and walks in his ways." Now we're talking about the marriage relationship very obviously, because what does it say here? "For you shall eat the labor of your hands, happy shalt thou be, and it will be well with thee. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of your house, thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that fears the Lord." The man and the woman, because they have a proper relationship. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse number 1. we just read here. Likewise, you husbands, it says here, dwell with them according to wise consideration, being heirs together. And then finally, this is what I want to emphasize in verse number 8, be of one mind. What if you have a home where the husband and wife are divided all the time? They don't think alike. They don't see things alike. They're at loggerheads all the time because they're in constant disagreements. You going to marry some woman that is not like-minded? Are you going to marry some man that isn't like-minded? Well, you better be finding those things out before you ever get married. And then finally, in Proverbs 31 here, it gives a very candid and clear-cut description of what a proper wife should be. I'm not going to read it all here because time is running out, but I do want to just read here Proverbs 31, verse number 10. Who can find a virtuous woman? And that word in the Hebrew means a competent woman. Really, a competent woman, a good woman, a worthy woman. And it goes on to describe here. It says, the heart of her husband does safely trust in her so that he shall have no lack of gain, is what it means. She's not going to go out and blow the bank account. She's not going to be buying outlandish things. It makes the house go broke. And it describes all of the things that she does. This is a remarkable woman. I can tell you, a woman like this deserves the greatest of respect. So I'm just saying, if you're a wife, or you're a husband, or you're thinking about getting married, you'd better be looking at some of these things. Now, if you've already married and you have a good chance to make a close introspection of the things you've heard today, you can change them, you can turn them around. And if you're a young person, then you'd better pay heed to these, because your whole future happiness is going to depend on it.